The Will Cain Show podcast is presented by Eno, the Capital One assistant. What's in your wallet?
Hey, what's up, folks? Today, we have a Dallas Cowboys draft podcast special. We're going to hang out with John Oning of the Dallas Morning News and Bobby Belt of the Boys and Girls podcast with Jane Slater. Over the past couple of weeks, you've probably noticed I've started to do some standalone podcasts, some deep dive interviews, some specific subject matter, deep dives. It's just another opportunity for us to hang out together, do a little more in-depth content. I'm going to keep doing this. In fact, I want you to join me on my Instagram at CWillCain, where I'm going to start doing some live feeds. I'll do some Q&As with you. We can start hanging out there. I'll always try to tweet more at WillCain, but I'm going to find new places for us to hang out other than just on the radio every day. Today, Bobby Belt is one of the co-hosts of the Boys and Girls podcast with Jane Slater. He is plugged in beat writer with the Dallas Cowboys. And John Oning writes for the Dallas Morning News, and he breaks down film like no one I've ever seen, knows the ins and outs of players and their skill sets. We talk about all of the Dallas Cowboys draft picks, where they fit in, how they satisfy a need, what their ceiling is, and how soon they can contribute. I have the guys grade the class and rank it among all other classes in the NFL. We also play a game of would you rather with every single pick as they came up. Would you rather had the guy the Cowboys selected, or here's three or four guys that came not long after them. It was a fun podcast. If you love the Cowboys, you love the draft, it's going to be a deep dive. I think you'll enjoy it. Here it is with John Oning and Bobby Belt. Go follow them. Go hang out with them, go consume their work, and I hope you come hang out with me too here and all those other social media platforms.
Capital One knows life doesn't alert you about your credit card. That's why we created Eno, the Capital One assistant that looks out for surprise credit card charges like overtipping, duplicate charges, or potential fraud, then sends an alert to your phone and helps if you need to fix them. Another way Capital One is watching out for your money when you're not. Capital One, what's in your wallet? See CapitalOne.com for details.
GEICO has the insurance industry-leading app that lets you manage your policy anytime, anywhere. Which means that GEICO is always there for you. If only everyone was always there for you. Like animal control, when you're cornered in your garage by an angry possum.
Hi, me again. You guys said you would be here about an hour ago, and I think the possum is starting to get angry. Listen, I thought if I fed it, it would go away, but now it is ripping holes in the drywall and making some sort of nest. Just call me back.
GEICO, always there for you with savings and the industry-leading mobile app.
All right, John Oning, Bobby Belt, how are we feeling Monday after the draft? I'll tell you this, I am very excited. How you feel today, John?
Oh, I'm so excited, man. I love the Cowboys draft on almost every pick, so I'm excited to talk about it, man.
Bobby, you happy today?
Yeah, no, thrilled, and I think the Cowboys are thrilled. I think in the number of areas, they got guys that they weren't expecting to be there, and so it's exciting for the fans, but I think the Cowboys staff is equally as excited.
All right, here's what I want to do hanging out with you guys over the next, I don't know, hour or so. I'm going to do the radio guy thing. I'm going to ask you for your grades on this Cowboy draft, and because I'm trained in the arts of first take, by the end of this conversation, I'll ask you to rank the Cowboys draft as compared to others in the NFL. But let's go through some of these players. Let's obviously talk about the team, how it fits needs, the ceiling. I've got a question or two on every single one of these players for you guys, but I'm going to start with this. Bobby, tell me what grade you would give the Cowboys draft.
So, I mean, I'm giving it an A+. I had said that if you looked at, even if day three, they went out there and drafted all long snappers, I would have given it an A+, because they just knocked it out of the park with the first three. But I think that they were able to get the best player available almost at every single pick. I was screaming for Anai in the third or fourth round. They were able to get him at the end of the fifth. And so I think that all over the place, the value was good. It happened to fall just perfectly to where they were able to fill needs as well. And so I think from either a needs or a BPA, you know, best pick available type of perspective, they knocked it out of the park across the board.
John, what grade would you give it?
Yeah, I'm right there with them. I would give it an A. There's not a single pick in the entire draft where I didn't think they got good value. I mean, the fact that Lamb lasted to the 17th overall pick is incredible. Trevon Diggs in the second round, somebody who they seemingly were considering in the first round, is fantastic. Neville Gallimore gives you an intriguing upside guy in the third round. Really like what they did on day four, getting a lot of high upside guys and getting guys that are well-rounded, guys like Reggie Robinson was really good. Bradley and I was my favorite pick. I even like what I see from the Ben DiNucci pick. So I would give it A all across the board. Really, really love the way what they did from both a needs perspective and a value perspective.
I would as well. I would give it an A plus. And I am, everyone knows, a homer. But the truth is, I'm also a little bit of a pessimistic homer. When I watch a game, it's a miserable experience. I'm always watching for what's going to happen terrible next. And I usually criticize the draft. But this time, the only thing that makes me nervous is that the draft made all of us so happy. And the draft is such a crapshoot that if the internet community, the scouting community always loves a draft, I don't know if that's what pans out in reality. But that could be me just trying to put my emotions in check. You've got CeeDee Lamb in the first, Trayvon Diggs in the second, Neville Gallimore in the third, you have Reggie Robinson and Tyler Biotic in the fourth, Bradley Anae in the fifth, and Ben DiNucci in the seventh. I know you guys know everything there is to know about all of these players. So let's go through them if we can. But before we talk about each player individually, I want to talk about kind of taking our excitement and putting it in check. I want to ask you guys this. What do you think we can expect from year one, from a contribution from these guys? Like, will any of these guys, and which of them, and we'll keep this short because we will talk about each of these guys in depth in a moment individually, but from a class perspective, next year, which ones do you think will have an impact on wins and losses? Bobby, I'll start with you.
Well, the first one, I think, obvious to everybody in terms of, you know, playing time will be available to him. I think people would default to Trayvon Diggs, but I don't think that's actually going to be the case. I think Trayvon Diggs will probably have some difficulties getting on the field a lot in his first year because they do have Jordan Lewis, Anthony Brown, Chidobe Awuzie. So they've got guys there that they like that are veterans that have been here for a while. And Trayvon Diggs is still a raw player. Lots of upside, but I don't know that he's going to be in a position to be a full-time starter right out of the gate. So I think the obvious is Lamb with Cobb leaving. They've got, you know, he'll be a third receiver, and three receivers is essentially what you roll with these days. And so I think that Lamb is the guy that will step in, fill Randall Cobb's role. And I would expect at least the production that Randall Cobb got last year. CeeDee Lamb is absolutely, to me, the best receiver that was available in this draft. And, you know, I had somebody with the Cowboys tell me that is the only guy on offense that they would have taken other than Ke'Lavon Chase on at 17.
John, some of these guys, especially the guys in the, I would say, fourth and fifth round, if they see the field in year one, it means something has gone incredibly right or incredibly wrong. Do you think, what do you think about expectations for year one for this class?
Yeah, I agree with a lot of what Bobby said. I think Lamb is obviously going to be the guy that makes the biggest immediate impact just with his ability with the ball in his hands, his playmaking ability, his ability to win at the catch point, and his ability to block. I think his ability to block will give the Cowboys more confidence to put him on the field immediately, especially in those heavy play-action sequences. I think he'll see a lot of time there. But one guy who I think will make a moderate impact, despite probably not seeing much time on defense, is Reggie Robinson. I think he's somebody who's going to play every special teams, and he's going to be a guy that is really effective, an effective gunner. He's going to play, I think, all four. He did a really good job at Tulsa blocking punts and kicks, so I think he's going to be able to carve out a role as a special teams ace early on in his career, and I think that's the way that he can make at least a moderate level of impact.
I agree with that. I think we have to get impact from CeeDee Lamb. I think we hopefully get impact from Trayvon Diggs. I think one of those two picks in the fourth round are going to contribute in this first year. It's either going to be Tyler Biotic pushing whoever's going to play center, Joe Looney, Connor McGovern, in a good way, meaning he's either going to take the job or he's going to push one of those guys to really win the job. And I've read what you guys have both posted. I've seen the film breakdown, John, that you've put up. Reggie Robinson's going to be a special teams player in year one, it looks like. And he's going to, with all those block kicks and punts he had at Tulsa, he's going to be able to contribute right away. And I would think John Fossil is excited about having him on the team. Now, I want to talk about each player individually. So let's go back to Thursday night. I think I did a pre-draft podcast with Marcus Mosier and Jonah Tulls. And Marcus was on receiver from the very beginning. And I accused him of wanting to be involved in the sexy pick, right? He wanted Jerry Jeudy. He wanted that. When I know we need pressure from the edge, the secondary's weak, and I'm thinking, last in the league or second to last in sacks. We can help our secondary by putting the quarterback on his butt. But I also am attracted to this idea of drafting to your strength. I've talked about it, like Dr. Oz has talked about that. Don't always try to shore up your weaknesses and be a Renaissance man. Double down on what you're good at. And the idea of outscoring them got so exciting to me as you saw CeeDee Lamb dropping. So we're looking at CeeDee Lamb dropping. Did either of you have any hesitation? Was it any thought? Like, Bobby, I'm going to go to you first on this because you know what the Cowboys were thinking. Like, how seriously were they entertaining Ke'Lavon Chase on for that pressure? Or once they saw CeeDee Lamb, was it, no, let's outscore him?
I think that by the time the pick got to them, they knew what they wanted. And they knew they wanted CeeDee Lamb. I think leading up to the pick, there was a little bit of discussion as to, okay, what direction are we going to go here? And I think those conversations were had leading up to the pick. I think by the time it got to 17, they were pretty confident. But it was a consideration for them. But, I mean, as Stephen Jones and Jerry Jones said, CeeDee Lamb was the sixth best player on their board. My impression is Ke'Lavon Chaisson was probably close to around 12 or 13 for them, which they would have taken. They would have loved that value at 17. They loved Ke'Lavon Chaisson. Never in their wildest dreams did they think that CeeDee Lamb would fall down there. And I think that when it got to that point, they couldn't pass up the value. And so I know that Chaisson, I think, really felt like if he was there, I think he felt like what was intimated to him was, if you're there, you're our guy. And so I think it surprised him a little bit. But it's not a case of the Cowboys, I think, misleading a prospect. I think it's just an example of they really didn't expect that CeeDee Lamb would get to them there. And when he did, the value was too great. I know for a fact that heading into day two, they had spoken with a player and said, you're in play for us at 51. We're not going to trade up, but, you're in play for us. It's just a matter of, are you the best player left on the board? Because we're picking whoever's best left on the board, regardless of the position. And I think that that's huge, a huge shift for the Cowboys, just looking at their first two picks from what they had always done under Jason Garrett and with a lot of the coaching staff that had a lot of pull to influence who they took. And sometimes that was really bad, Tristan Hill, Taco Charlton, and other times it was good. Jason Garrett and Wade Wilson really fought hard to get Dak Prescott here. And so, it was a double-edged sword a little bit, but I think ultimately what you saw this year and why everybody's so thrilled is the scouts were allowed to do their jobs.
Hey, Bobby, I'm curious, if they communicate to Ke'Lavon Chaisson ahead of time that if you're there, we're going to take you, you're our guy, do they call him after the fact and explain why they didn't take him? I'm just curious. Do they do that?
They would not, and to be clear, I don't know if any of these conversations were had, they would not call Chaisson directly. What they would do is somebody in the personnel department, I would guess, called his agent, David Mulugeta, and communicated that to him. That is not unusual for them to do that.
And just say, hey, we didn't expect Lamb being there.
Yeah, just kind of like flesh it out a little bit. But, I mean, I know Chaisson's camp was well aware of what happened there. I think they were disappointed, but I think they understood that was it. And like I said, somebody in the Cowboys told me that, at the start of the draft, that they wouldn't have taken even Joe Burrow if he slid to 17. But at the start of the draft, CeeDee Lamb is the only player that if left on the board at 17, the only offensive player that they would have taken over Chaisson in those circumstances.
One more for you, Bobby, on that background. Did they seriously consider trading out of 17 at all?
No. I think early on that was a contingency plan for that. Heading into the draft, I had been told that their big dream was C.J. Henderson, the corner from Florida, and that they really liked as contingencies Ke'Lavon Chaisson and A.J. Terrell, the corner from Clemson. And that was kind of where they were focusing in on. If that didn't fall the way they wanted it to, if they somehow got wiped out, which I know a lot of people didn't think that was possible with Terrell, but you saw him go 16 to Atlanta. If they got wiped out, then they would look at, let's try and bail out of this pick if we can. And if they were able to trade back, or if they got stuck, I think the targets were Trayvon Diggs, the linebackers Kenneth Murray from Oklahoma, Patrick Queen from LSU, and potentially Yetur Gross-Matos, the defensive end out of Penn State. But yeah, I don't think they ever thought they'd have Chaisson there, or I think they were 50-50 on Chaisson getting there, but I know they never dreamed of getting C.J. Henderson there, much less CeeDee Lamb, who they had higher than him.
John, I did a pre-draft podcast with Matt Miller from Bleacher Report and Lance Zierlein of NFL.com. We talked about this wide receiver class, and they said they have some concerns. While these guys are good, and I think most of their pre-draft, or rather their post-draft coverage, indicates they like Lamb, I think they both said they weren't sure Judy or Lamb were absolute wide receiver ones. You've looked at his stuff. Like, what's the ceiling for Lamb? What did the Cowboys just draft here?
I think they got a potential number one dominant receiver on the outside who can play, honestly, who can thrive at any wide receiver spot. I really like a lot of the traits that he has. He has the incredible foot quickness, so he can create separation in and out of his breaks, and he can get off press coverage at the line of scrimmage, even though he didn't see it often. But where I think he really excels is from break point to catch point and from catch point to the tackle point. He really does a good job of accelerating out of his cuts to create separation, and then he's just so consistent at the catch point. He does all the little details well. He does a really good job of boxing out cornerbacks at the catch point by using his body as a barrier between the ball and the defender. So he's turning 50-50 balls into more like 70-30 balls or even 80-20 balls. So he's really quarterback friendly. And then when he gets the ball in his hands, he's special. He's super creative with his elusiveness. He's very slippery. He makes good judgments. Sometimes he'll get a little bit dancy, which is the risk you take because just his ability to potentially put points on the board every time he touches the ball is something that I think just separates him from a lot of the receivers in this class.
Do you think it's the size or his hair while we keep comparing to DeAndre Hopkins, or do you think it's fair?
I think it's fair because he's not overly fast. He uses more nuance to create separation. He's not the type that's going to run by you, but he has enough speed to maintain the separation that he can create out of the catch point. He has some of that physicality at the catch point, and he does a really good job of something that DeAndre Hopkins is really probably the best in the NFL at, is creating late separation with his hands. A really good thing that Lamb does is he'll play into the receiver and then get that little subtle push off. So at the last second, he veers away, and it'll be an uncontested catch because the cornerback is stuck behind him, shielded away from the ball. So I just, it makes a lot of sense. A lot of people call him the skinnier DeAndre Hopkins, and I totally see it, you know, even with the dreads and everything.
I want to ask both of you guys this. Let's talk about fit with CeeDee Lamb. I'm going to play devil's advocate for a moment. I think anybody that goes to my Twitter feed or any of you guys' Twitter feed knows, I mean, it's almost universal. Everybody loved the CeeDee Lamb pick, but I am going to play devil's advocate. Are you concerned at all that you've got Michael Gallup, you've got Amari Cooper, you've got CeeDee Lamb, and there's only one ball and only so much that can go around? In other words, like, four quarters doesn't always make a dollar, and you're not going to get full value out of any of these three guys if you're trying to make all three of them happy. You know, I don't know how many targets Amari Cooper needs a game to get his full value out of him. Michael Gallup doesn't look like somebody you should be going backwards on at all. You should be dialing up the number of targets that Michael Gallup gets. And now CeeDee Lamb's going to need some as well. And I know it's not basketball, like, where, oh, so-and-so needs so many shots a game. But in a way, to get full value out of somebody, you are going to have to get the ball to them. And I don't know if Dak's going to throw the ball 40 times a game, but if I'm looking for one concern, I'm going, okay, it's this combination of fit and need. I know Lamb and Cooper can both play the slot, so they can both be on the field, but is anybody ever going to fully blossom if you've got too many, you know, flowers planted in the garden? Go ahead, Bobby, you first.
I think that I understand the idea that I think just from a production standpoint alone would be the only level of disappointment. I don't think that you could ever go wrong with having that amount of talent on the field. I mean, we saw last year that, you know, I think that CeeDee Lamb's going to end up being a better player than Randall Cobb, but Randall Cobb's a really good player and a former Pro Bowler, and I think that you saw last year everybody was able to get their touches. You know, Michael Gallup got his 1,100 yards. Amari Cooper had, you know, his over 1,100 yards. You had the, you know, 800 or so from Randall Cobb, and that was with penalties taking away several plays for Cobb. He would have gone over 1,000. You can make, you know, a trio of 1,000-yard receivers, I think, while still getting Ezekiel Elliott involved running the ball, getting him involved in the pass game, getting Tony Pollard involved more in the pass game. I really think they're going to end out if you want to see how Tony Pollard's going to be used this year, I think you look at how Mike McCarthy used Ty Montgomery in Green Bay, and that's what you're going to start seeing from Pollard. And I think Pollard is going to be a lot more lined up in the slot and lined up on the line of scrimmage than he is, you know, in the backfield. You can put him in the backfield, and I think they can do some creative things with him. But, yeah, I don't think this is a problem necessarily, especially with somebody like Jason Witten out of the picture now, who you did, I think, feel kind of the need to give him his touches and get the ball his way. And that took away, I think, from some of the more dynamic plays that were available down the field. So I don't think it's a problem at all. I think you look at what Sean McVay's done with a trio of receivers. You look at what the Chiefs were able to do. Even look at when Mike McCarthy kind of burst onto the scene. He took the job with Green Bay in 06. 07 is when they really took off with Brett Favre. He had a career year. And that year, they were all the rage was, look at these five receiver sets that Mike McCarthy's running. And then look at what they're able to do in distributing the ball. And so I think that they are going to be a vertical passing game. I think they are going to, you know, be prolific. And I think everybody's going to get their touches. To your point, it's not basketball, but we saw 2010, 2011, before the Dallas Mavericks ended the Miami Heat run, we saw how the Heat all, Bosh, LeBron, Wade, they all, their production kind of pulled back from what they did solo. But in the end, it was a stronger group that was able to produce at a really high level. So maybe the stat box will look a little less impressive than people are thinking. I don't think we're going to get three 1,500-yard receivers. But, you know, if Lamb can get you 800, Gallup gets you 12, Cooper gets you 12, or any combination like that, I think they're going to be a really dangerous team next year.
Bobby, you make a great point, by the way. I want to see more Tony Pollard as well. So, John, do this for me. What was it? Is it three receivers, one tight end? You get two backs out on the field. How are you going to take advantage of all of this talent?
Yeah, I think you're going to see the Cowboys use a lot of 11 personnel, one tight end, one receiver with or one running back with Ezekiel Elliott, the three receivers, as we've been saying, with Gallup, Lamb, and Cooper. I think you're going to see them use a lot of 10 personnel or 20 personnel to get Tony Pollard on the field, do some two running back sets with Ezekiel Elliott and Tony Pollard to just play off their opposing skill sets, give different looks against the run, be able to maybe even incorporate more of those triple option looks that they experimented with last season. So there's really the possibilities are endless the way you can maneuver and manipulate the alignments and formations that you use these guys because they're all so well-rounded. I mean, out of the receivers, I think Michael Gallup's the only guy who has an outside-only really skill set. I think that Cooper and Lamb just have the both ability to play inside, outside of line, anywhere. You can detach Jarwin from the formation to really give a really long surface to really spread defenses out to create intermediate seams, all of those type of little things. So I just think the possibilities are really endless the way you can manipulate and take advantage of these defenses. And I think it's something that's going to change from week to week, depending on the personnel that they play.
Okay. And I'm going to play this game with you as we talk about these prospects of would you rather. There's no point in doing a would you rather in round one because I think all of us were on it. We all loved it and are behind CeeDee Lamb. But as we go to rounds 2, 3, and 4, I want to look at who went after our guy and say, would you have rather had any of these guys? The main pushback people have to CeeDee Lamb, if there is any, and I think Mac Engel in the Fort Worth Star Telegram was one of the only guys I saw that said, why take a receiver? The main pushback is the Cowboys need to do better on defense. They need more talent. They need better turnover production. They need better sack production. So they went defense for the next three picks. So let's go to the next guy, Trayvon Diggs. Now, cornerback, Alabama. Bobby, you just said he's a little raw. That's everything I've read. He's big. He's long. He's a ball hawk, so he can get turnovers. But he gets a little undisciplined, it looked like, from everything that I've read. He can bite on double moves. So, Bobby, you even projected he could sit more than we think in his first year. So I'll go to you first on this, John. Like, what is Trayvon Diggs' ceiling?
I think his ceiling is to be really the upper echelon of his ceiling is really to be a really effective outside press man corner. You know, just his ability to really bully receivers at the line of scrimmage, use his length and his strength to really disrupt the timing of routes, widen releases is really good. He's really good. Despite his lack of long speed, he's really good at using his physicality to control and tempo routes, which is why he was so good defending on a vertical plane this year. I think he had something like a 20% completion percentage when he was targeted 20 yards down the field on deep balls and go routes. So I think he's somebody that you can just put in, put the press man against the bigger receivers and really dominate at the line of scrimmage. He's somebody who can contest at the catch point. The thing that I think helps his projection the most is his football intelligence and mental processing ability from zone coverage. I really like his ability to cover two-man route combinations. He does a really good job with his spacing awareness. He can make plays outside of his responsibility, which shows just how much mastery he had of that Alabama scheme, which is really impressive because he was a cornerback or a wide receiver convert. He only had, I think, 3 years of cornerback experience, or I think maybe even 2.5. So I think he's somebody who can be a really, really higher-end press cornerback for the Cowboys, you know, really be effective in man coverage, cover one, cover three. He can even play some cover two press, place run support, you know, with his size. So I think the thing about Diggs is he was one of the higher upside cornerbacks in this class, especially amongst that kind of cluster of five cornerbacks after C.J. Henderson and Jeffrey Okuda. I think Trevon Diggs, just based on his inexperience, his length, his ball skills, how advanced he is from an aptitude perspective, I think he had the highest upside of those five, that cluster of Gladney, Igbinogheni, Jalen Johnson, and all of them. So I really think the upside is really, really high with him.
Bobby, it seems like this coaching staff, Nolan McCarthy, Al Harris, the defensive backs coach, it seems like they actually like the same kind of DB that the previous regime did, which is big guys, right? Big, strong, almost like Chris Richard's Seattle Seahawks guys. That's what Diggs and that's what Robinson are, big, long guys, which doesn't bode well for Jordan Lewis over the next year as he looks for a contract. But you don't see Diggs beating out Awuzie or Lewis or Brown this first year, Bobby?
Not yet, just because, like I say, I mean, and like John just said there, he's still so raw. And, I mean, he's a guy that, you know, up until 3 years ago was playing receiver. And, you know, so he's still learning the position. I know he worked with Clay Mack, the DB trainer out here in Dallas. And Clay said he's seen a lot of growth from him and that you can already see him starting to put it all together, but that he's still just kind of barely scratched the surface and that there's, you know, astronomical potential here. To your point, talking about the type of corners that they seem to like, this new coaching staff, I think you're right on point. If you look at the staff in Green Bay and the type of corners and defensive backs that they were taking, they obviously kind of fluctuated Demarius Randall between safety and corner. But, I mean, look at some of these defensive backs they took over the last few years. Demarius Randall, Quentin Rollins, Kevin King. Those were guys the Cowboys liked. Those guys were guys that the Cowboys were targeting sort of in the same area, and Green Bay ended up snatching them up. So I do think it is a nicer fit, and I think it's something that is going to be a little more seamless because, yeah, they do like the length, and they do like the physicality. I think that they're a little more – I think the emphasis is going to be more on play speed than it was with Richard, and that they're going to look for better athletes at corner. Mm-hmm. And I think you see that with Diggs and kind of the move away from others. But I think that, yeah, early on, you're going to still see Awuzie holding the job, Lewis, Brown. I think those are going to be your main corners with Robinson and Diggs getting worked in. I actually think Reggie Robinson, technically speaking, is farther along than Trevon Diggs is. I think Robinson's more ready to be out there and play, but wow. He is a quick learner. He's hungry for knowledge, Trevon Diggs is. He wants to be out there. He wants to continue to get better. So yeah, I'm not putting it past him to be, you know, so far advanced once we get to the season or done so much work that he's ready to play. But I think as of now, he's probably fifth on the depth chart in terms of readiness. He may not be fifth on the Cowboys' actual depth chart. He may get some more snaps than Reggie Robinson, but in terms of being ready to go up against an NFL receiver, their whole toolbox, the mind games, how they approach setting up a defensive back, I think Reggie Robinson and the three on the roster are better prepared right now, but I do think Diggs probably ends up being the best of the five when it's all said and done.
Okay, let's play Would You Rather with Trevon Diggs. So, Bobby, you mentioned it. I think we all heard this leading up to the draft. They liked him so much, there was potential for him to go in the first if they traded back. So clearly when he dropped to 51, they're excited. But for either of you guys, we'll go John, then Bobby. These are the names that I think a lot of Cowboys fans, Cowboys watchers were talking about that were still on the board at 51. Zach Bond, who dropped into the third, would have been an edge rusher from Wisconsin. Jeremy Chinn, the safety from Southern Illinois, who went late second, and Christian Fulton, the cornerback from LSU, went, I don't know what it was, 10 picks after Trayvon Diggs. John, would you have rather had any of these three guys than Trayvon Diggs?
Oh, I would have rather had Zach Bond. Zach Bond's my guy. I just think that his ability as a pass rusher would have been fantastic value in the late second round. I thought that just in terms of pass rush ability right now, he was the second best pass rusher in this class. So he was somebody that I would have been extremely happy with if they would have made that pick. But having said that, I can't be upset with the Diggs pick, but I just think that Bond, first of all, he would have been able to affect the game more immediately, I think, than Diggs. I think he has an easier path to see the field. And just he can contribute in so many different ways against the run, against the pass, both as a pass rusher and in coverage. So, yeah, I would have rather preferred Zach Bond to Trayvon Diggs there.
John, why do you think Bond fell so much lower than so many projected? There was some projections of him going in the first, and he dropped to the Saints in the third. Why?
I think, first of all, that he doesn't – he's kind of a tweener size-wise. He doesn't have the elite size that you want for a pass rusher. He doesn't have the elite athleticism either. A lot of what he does is technical. It's aptitude. It's pass rush intelligence. And then I think that diluted sample just created even more questions in his profile that just caused him to just tumble a little bit down the draft. You know, it's just – it really blew my mind, honestly, because I was in love with the player, but I don't know all of the – any potential character issues or if there was any injury questions, durability concerns. But from what I see, it seems like it's just a tweener size just really got him here.
Bobby, any of those three players I mentioned, Bond, Chinn, Fulton, or anyone else you would have rather had over Diggs?
No, not at all. I think that, you know, Bond was the best of the three players. But I think that Diggs out of the four has the highest ceiling. You're projecting a little bit, and you're making a gamble, but I think you do have to feel better about the gamble they made knowing you did get Reggie Robinson in the fourth. I don't know that Reggie Robinson is as high a ceiling guy as some of the other corners, but the floor is lower or the floor is higher. You know, he's not going to be, I feel like he's always going to be a solid contributor. And so I think that, with the insurance they had, I feel even better about going with Diggs and gambling on that value, knowing that if things don't quite play out the way you want, you've probably still got somebody solid for 2021 after Lewis and Awuzie potentially leave in Reggie Robinson, Anthony Brown, and then you can go get another corner if you quickly decide you've made a Tristan Hill mistake and go, oh, okay, we're going to need to replace this here.
All right, that brings us to the third round pick, Neville Gallimore. Now, I'll tell you guys, I'm excited about every single one. I really am. But I think Gallimore out of Oklahoma might be my least excitement of a pick of all of these guys. Now, I made my way through a lot of the clips that John broke down on Twitter, and I saw a lot of the stuff that you talked about. Johnny gets high. He gives a big blocking target to the offensive lineman. He has an extremely high motor. You talked about that. But I also looked at need, and I'm thinking, okay, you got McCoy and Poe. I don't know how long they'll be here, but you at least have them now. I think we still have Woods, don't we, Bobby? Isn't Woods still technically around?
He's under their control. I don't know that he's signed his ERFA tender yet. But, yeah, I mean, if they want him here, they can have him here.
Hill is still, I don't know, a lotto ticket that you have. I don't know. I like Gallimore, and I think defensive tackle is a need, but I have to say, I don't know, maybe it's just a feeling. I was least excited post-draft reading, breaking down, and going into it, reading into it about Gallimore than the others. I don't mean that I'm down on it, but I'm just so excited about the others. So, John, I'll go to you first. Like, should I be more excited? Like, what's the ceiling for Gallimore?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. Going into the draft, I was seeing kind of a negative Nancy surrounding Neville Gallimore because he was being projected as kind of a high mid to second round pick. And I just didn't see the value there given all the issues that you laid out that I talked about on Twitter in my thread. And, but when you tell me you get him in the late third round, I think that it's the value justifies the pick. I had him graded as a third round player and you grab him in the late third round. It's a solid value. He's somebody who, you know, first step explosiveness, his ability to play on the other edge of this line of scrimmage. He's just his explosiveness off the snap is really special, and the fact that he gets to learn behind Gerald McCoy, who has one of the most potent first steps ever in the NFL for an interior defensive line, is really, really good. So he's exciting. You know, I think you should be higher about him, and the biggest reason I think you should be a little bit more excited is his pass rush potential. He is dripping with oozing pass rush traits. He has the explosiveness. He has the lateral quickness. He has the heavy hands. He already has a move that's ready to win in the NFL with that jab club arm over. He just needs to continue to refine his hand technique, his footwork, and if he can ever get a little bit more flexible in his hips so that he can drop his pads and redirect in the backfield, you're going to have somebody that's going to be really an exciting pass rusher in the next level, and somebody who I think can contribute similar pass rush ability as that Malik Collins gave the Cowboys last year, maybe in years 2, 3, 4. I'm hoping years 3 or 4 he can contribute that same similar kind of pass rush ability as Malik Collins provided the Cowboys with last year.
Bobby, that's a 3 technique, right, that John's describing. Is that what you expect the Cowboys to do with Gallimore?
Yeah, I think that Gallimore's a 3 technique. I think they project him as the replacement for Malik Collins in the future after Tristan Hill was supposed to be that, and they're not getting what they want from Tristan Hill. I do think that Gallimore, if he tested really poorly. I mean, his 40 time was good for such a big guy, but his 3 cone was around 8. I mean, he's not, you know, he didn't test really fluidly. A lot of guys tested poorly at the combine. And I know that a lot of these training facilities and these agents were insistent that if you look at how awful the testing times were this year compared to previous years in the position groups, they were convinced it was just the late night training or doing the testing late at night. And, you know, after a day of mental fatigue, doing, you know, all these interviews with teams and going through other things, that you're seeing, you know, physical and mental drain by the time they were stepping up there to work out. And so I know that Gallimore's numbers, the guys who trained him don't think that's representative of the type of player that he is, and that he would test better than that. It definitely shows better athleticism on tape than you saw at the combine. In terms of the numbers that he had, I think that essentially what I think the Cowboys believe they're getting there is they're getting a redo on Tristan Hill, getting somebody with some similar, you know, issues and some similar skills and traits. But the biggest issue with Tristan Hill, they're not getting a Neville Gallimore, which is Neville Gallimore works hard. Neville Gallimore's got the high motor, and Neville Gallimore's not a moody player. And so I think that what they're looking at Gallimore as is like, okay, here's take two. Not quite the same athlete as Hill, but close, moves just as well, has some of the same issues with contact balance and things like that. But I think that they view Gallimore as somebody who is, okay, here's our mulligan on Hill. Let's get somebody similar to Hill who we believe has better football character.
Bobby, when I read you, when I listen to all of you guys, I hear a sense of resignation when it comes to Tristan Hill, like it's over. He was just drafted 1 year ago. Is it over? Mm-hmm. Is there a reclamation project here for Tristan Hill? I know it was a different regime that drafted him, but it feels like everybody's already written him off.
Yeah, I mean, I had somebody in the building at the start of this offseason say he's Taco Charlton. So, I mean, they soured greatly on Taco Charlton, that entire building did. And I think they feel like they're seeing some of those same maturity concerns that they had with Taco and some of the same poutiness and you know, gets really low when things aren't going his way. Not necessarily a, you know, pitching a fit sort of way, just his emotions run with how good things are going. And I know that when you look at UCF, things were always improving there. And Scott Frost's staff, who had been at UCF, endorsed Tristan Hill to the Cowboys after Josh Heupel's staff would not and said that they thought he was a problem child. That's why they benched him and things like that. I know Scott Frost's staff, who's now at Nebraska, did endorse it. And I know that last year there was a sense from somebody who was on that staff with Scott Frost that, you know, now that we think about it, Tristan did kind of, you know, rise and fall with things being good or bad. So maybe we saw false growth. Maybe he was just responding to the way the team was growing and things were going better with the team. And so he was mirroring that and we just believed that was growth that wasn't actually happening. So I know there were some people on Scott Frost's staff who wondered, oh, sorry, Cowboys, we may have dinged you a little bit there. Maybe we weren't totally right about his maturity. And so I do think that internally in the building, they question whether he loves football. They question whether he wants to work hard, his toughness, things like that, his maturity. And I think that they're pretty close, especially with this new regime, to wanting to just write that one off and move on.
Wow. Let's play Would You Rather, John. Here's who's on the board in the third round when they take Neville Gallimore. Yeah, another defensive tackle, Jordan Elliott, out of Missouri, transfer from Texas, who I think carries some of those same personality questions, but more athleticism than Neville Gallimore. Edge rusher, Terrell Lewis, out of Alabama, and then everybody in Cowboy fandom, and by the way, beyond Cowboy fandom, because I know Zierlein and Miller liked him a lot as well. Burgess, the safety out of Utah. Those three guys, or anybody else you would have rather had over Neville Gallimore at that point?
Yeah, I would have rather had Terrell Burgess for sure. Just his ability to play in the slot is really effective. His ability to play split safety positions, I really love the value there, because I had him as a second round grade. And I also kind of would have preferred Elliott, just because I think the upside is a little bit better. He's a little bit more athletic. He's a little bit, in a sense, he can redirect. He can change direction a little bit better. He's a little bit more disruptive with his upper body strength. He can two gap a little bit better. He's a lot stronger at the point of attack. He can take on double teams a little bit better than Gallimore can. And yeah, so the third round, this is the pick where there were a couple of guys that I would have rather had, like you said, like Burgess and Jordan Elliott were the two guys I was looking at, but I still think the value was justified at Gallimore, even though he wasn't my preferred pick.
Bobby, would you rather had anybody else over Gallimore, right?
I would have rather had, I know why they didn't go this direction, and I know he went much later than this. I would have rather had Curtis Weaver there. I really think he's going to be a good player. I think he was slept on a little bit. I know there are some small character concerns there and some potential injury concerns, especially with his feet. And so I know that feet and big men, that's a scary thing for teams, and I think that's probably why he slid some. So I know that wasn't necessarily realistic. I really like Jordan Elliott. I think he was better than Neville Gallimore. I think that given the Cowboys' experience recently with Moody defensive linemen, and not necessarily a Moody one, but a quirky, passionate one in DeMarcus Lawrence, who didn't step up necessarily as the leader they wanted him to in Tyrone Crawford's place last year, I think they were not wanting to gamble on any potential questions about love of football or football character on the defensive line. And so Neville Gallimore, I don't think they feel they have those questions at all. And so I think they felt good about that. So I can't blame them for not going Elliott or Weaver with some concerns there. I will say, while I like Burgess, and I think Burgess could have been a better player than Gallimore there, the Cowboys have shown consistently they don't quite value taking a safety very high. HaHa Clinton Dix is sort of a McCarthy guy, and they do like Xavier Wood, so I could see them saying we don't think that's necessarily a need right here. And I will say, two of the programs this team knows best, that their scouts know really well, and their connections run really deep with those programs, are Oklahoma and Utah. So if Dallas looked at that and said, we want Gallimore over Burgess, I feel at peace about that decision.
Can I interject one more thing about Gallimore, too?
Of course.
I think that he will be playing in a scheme that better fits his skill set in the NFL than he did in college. I really think that that Oklahoma defense didn't really do him a lot of favors playing him at the nose and stemming their front so much. He got hit with a ton of double teams, which doesn't really fit his skill set. He wasn't able to really play upfield vertically a ton. They did a lot of slanting and stemming their front, so he wasn't able to read blocks, play in the blocks, use his vertical explosiveness to really penetrate on a really consistent basis. And I think in the NFL, when you have him on that shaded alignment outside the guard and allow him to get upfield and disrupt, I think he's going to be a lot more successful and a lot more consistent than what we saw from him in Oklahoma.
All right, let's go to the fourth round. I know everybody's excited about Reggie Robinson. Bobby, you just told us earlier you thought he's going to see the field earlier, and he might not have the ceiling that Trayvon Diggs has, but he could also see special teams, as John pointed out. Here's what I want to ask you guys about Reggie Robinson. is he for sure a cornerback? I know Mike McCarthy afterwards talked about corners and safeties being interchangeable. I'm not sure he was just talking about the guys they drafted. I also know in some of the mock draft simulators, for whatever that's worth, Robinson was listed as a safety in addition to cornerback. So what did the Cowboys draft here with Robinson? A special teams player, a corner, a safety, all of the above? I'll start with you, Bobby.
They drafted a corner who can play some safety if they need be, and it will be a special teams contributor. I do think that my assumption, and I don't know this for sure, my assumption is the reference to safety was about Awuzie. I don't know that they've been totally happy with how he's played on the outside. He was benched in the Philly game. I think that he's a guy that they who had some experience at safety, and they I know we're considering is he corner or safety when he's coming out. I could see them viewing him more as a safety. It's possible Green Bay had graded him as a safety. And so I could see that being the guy that they were talking about. But Robinson can play some safety. It's a position he's played before. And so I think he does project better as a corner, and I think that's where they're going to play him. But, I mean, you look at, you know, the type of, again, players that – and I know this is Mike Nolan's defense, but you look at the type of players that Mike McCarthy had in Green Bay, they were kind of some scheme-flexible guys who were asked to do – you know, a few different things. You know, Randall was bounced around between corner and safety. They had Quentin Rollins play some corner and safety. They had Micah Hyde play corner and safety. So I know that McCarthy, when he was in Green Bay, they always had guys that kind of had the ability to do both. So I'm certain that is something that they like and think Reggie Robinson has the ability to do if they need it.
John, is it just Reggie Robinson or both Diggs and Robinson going to be interchangeable in the defensive backfield?
I think mostly Reggie Robinson. I think the thing about Reggie Robinson is I don't think you want to play him in deep safety alignments because the thing that he does best is press and bully receivers at the line of scrimmage. I mean, just watch what he did against Oklahoma State's Tylan Wallace, who a lot of people say is going to be a first or round pick or top 20 pick in next year's draft. He completely shut him down on the reps that they had, and that was because of his ability to bully him at the line of scrimmage. So I don't really think you want to take that out of his game, but as far as being able to contribute in safety-like ways, I think that he's someone who you can reduce inside and have him match tight ends one-on-one at the line of scrimmage against inline and flexed-out tight ends, something that Byron Jones really did with the Cowboys defense a lot. I think Reggie Robinson has that same kind of skill set that he can do that responsibility that's typically tailored for safeties.
Okay, let's play Would You Rather. I have two names here with Reggie Robinson taken pretty early in the fourth. You had James Lynch, defensive lineman from Baylor, who I got kind of excited about as like a three technique defensive tackle. And you had Bryce Hall, the cornerback. And I talked with you on Twitter about this, John. I guess there was injury concerns about Bryce Hall. Would you rather had either Hall or Lynch over Robinson?
No, I would rather had Robinson here. I think his upside is higher than either of those guys. He doesn't have the durability concerns that Bryce Hall had. And I think that Lynch, I don't think Lynch has the highest upside because the lack of long arms. I think he's somebody who can be a really effective rotational interior lineman because of his motor, because some of his hand technique stuff that he does. But I don't think he really has the high enough upside to be a starting caliber, really three technique. And I do think Reggie Robinson has the upside to be a starting outside cornerback in the NFL.
Bobby, anybody you would have rather had at that point?
Well, I said at the third round I would have liked Curtis Weaver, but I understood why they didn't go there. So I'll say the same thing here. I would have liked Curtis Weaver in the fourth, but I understand why they go there. The only other guy that I actually, in that same realm, kind of liked a little bit was his teammate, actually. Reggie Robinson's teammate was Travis Gibson, the edge rusher. I liked Gibson a lot. And so I think that actually, knowing that Weaver had the concerns that he did, I think Gibson or Robinson would have been a good pick there. I mean, it was kind of a flip a coin.
Okay, then the end of the fourth round, the Cowboys trade back in. Do a deal with the Eagles. I think the terms of the trade seem like a massive Cowboy win. I'll let you both address that. But it seems like a massive Cowboys win. And here's the deal. It's impossible for any Cowboy fan not to see Tyler Biadasz as Travis Frederick. We got another Wisconsin center, another quote-unquote unathletic, smart technician. And I feel like we might have just drafted another, I don't know, Pro Bowl center, one of the best in the league. But I'm playing color by numbers because it's Wisconsin center, lunch pail guy, right? All the great cliches. But I am kind of excited. Here's the thing about Biotis. He's kind of all over the board on some of my draft guides. And I get a ton. I get Dane Brugler's. I get Dan Shonka's. I read Mel Kiper and Todd McShay. On some of them, he's like the second best center in the draft after Cesar Ruiz. In others, he's like fifth. And it comes down to, was he hurt last year? Is he too unathletic? Everybody agrees he's smart and he's a technician. It basically boils down to he's either going to be a center for the next decade that you can forget about and be happy, or he's just kind of not going to be ever good enough to get on the field. Which is it, John?
I think that he's interesting. I think a lot of the differences in evaluations come from how much they valued his 2018 season, because in 2018, the tape is really exciting. It's really, really good. It's much better than he was in 2019 after the hip surgery. He's a lot stronger at the point of attack. He created more movement on contact. I think that's the area where you saw he took the biggest step back in 2019, was the lack of play and core strength, because he spent his entire offseason rehabbing that hip injury instead of being able to get stronger. So you saw he wasn't able to create that initial knockback on contact. So, but the thing that gives me more, that makes me more excited about his future and why I think he can become a starting caliber center, is just where he is from a mental processing point of view. I mean, for that Wisconsin offensive line, he was directing traffic, calling out line games. He was pointing out the mic. He was helping set protections, helping set the line run schemes, all of those type of things. He seemed to be a really smart player from that point of view. And I think that's something that Travis Frederick also had, which is why I think the comparisons are kind of appropriate. I went into Biadasz's film really trying to go against the fact that he was Frederick. I think, oh, this guy's not going to be Frederick. There's no way. But as you watch him more and more and more, I see a lot of the same things that I saw with Frederick when he was coming out. He lunges a little bit. He has a little bit of issues with contact balance. You don't see a ton of movement created at the point of attack, but you see him being able to slide and shield defenders pretty well. You see a really good ability to pull and block in space. He does a good job climbing to the second level. You know, he can be a little bit out of control when he gets there. But one thing that I really loved with climbing the second level is he can adjust his angles to the linebackers as they're moving. And I think that's so important in the NFL, where everything is hitting so quick inside the tackles. You have to be able to adjust on the fly, and he has that. So as long as he can improve his play strength, get it more toward 2018 levels, and then improve it off that, I think he's someone that definitely can be a starting caliber center in the NFL.
Hey, Bobby, what's the plan? Not just at center, but guard. And maybe even it spills over into tackle. Because at this point, and I love that they double down on strengths. It's going to be wide receiver and offensive line. I love the doubling down on strengths. But you've got Joe Looney for another year. And he was kind of a mixed bag when he filled in for Frederick a year ago. You've got Connor McGovern, who I'm kind of excited. We didn't see anything, but he was a third-round pick a year ago. You got Connor Williams. And there's talk of now adding Biadasz. The combo, you could even have Williams now swinging out to tackle if all these guys can play well inside. Like, what's the plan on how you use these puzzle pieces on the offensive line?
That is a great question that I'm not sure the Cowboys have an answer to yet. And it's funny. I'll just to give some inside baseball here a little bit. Jason Garrett's staff had been there a long time. The scouting staff's been there for a long time. We see there's a lot of players who are familiar to us that have been in that locker for a long time. So the beat's always been able to develop relationships, and then, you know, there's a long-term trust there where they're able to report certain things, or they're getting tipped off to certain things. It's a little different this year because not only has the coaching staff almost completely changed out, but it's changed out at a time where we're not allowed to be anywhere near the facility, and we're not allowed to interact with these guys. There's really not been an opportunity for people to develop relationships with this coaching staff yet and develop that trust to where a coach may tell you off the record or tip you a little bit as to what's coming. And so I think it is a little more difficult to kind of project some of those questions because of the lack of a relationship and insight from this coaching staff right now with the media. But I will just say, reading tea leaves, as John talked about there, Biadasz's strength, his core strength, his drive his power, it's not really there from what I saw. And so remembering that that was also at times an issue with Looney, that Looney was a fine athlete, but I mean, Looney had some power problems at times. And then the power problems they had with Connor Williams as a rookie in 2018. And just remembering how much Rush was getting right up the middle into Dak's face in 2018. And I don't know how much more Connor Williams has improved his play strength. And I don't think they trade up to get Biotis just to be a backup. I think that's the guy they probably project as somebody they want to play center for them. And so if that's the case, I got to feel like that means Connor Williams is not going to be your starting guard, because I don't think they want a repeat of what they saw when you had the left guard and the center having power issues. And then it was a lot of Rush right up Dak's face. And a lot of guys able to penetrate and get to Ezekiel Elliott. And so I don't think they're going to want to get that. I would guess, my guess right now is Looney or Biotis starts at center. Connor McGovern will start at left guard, and Connor Williams is your swing tackle. That would be what I'm guessing they're looking at right now.
Is there any reason to be excited about McGovern other than the fact that they spent a third-round pick on him? We didn't get to see anything last year.
I think McGovern's a good player. And he was – last year they used the term blinking light about him when he was on the board, that he was just so much higher rated than anybody else they had left. They had to go get him. And I believe Connor McGovern – had a higher grade from the Cowboys than Tristan Hill did. I think that's what I was told. I know Tristan Hill was not the highest rated player they drafted in 2018, and I believe it was McGovern that they had rated higher than. So they like him, and I think that he offers a lot of excitement, but it was also a little concerning how, you know, everything kind of kept getting pushed back and back, and he'll be ready at some point. And but when they do that kind of stuff, with, you know, Leighton Van Der Esch or, you know, James Hanna or guys that we've seen them do that with in the past, it's always been a little dicey as to what's up with their health. And so, I mean, it was a pec injury. It was a serious thing. But I kind of wonder a little bit, you know, how healthy McGovern is or how serious that was. Not necessarily long-term health, but I think that was a bigger deal last year than they talked about. But I think that he could be a plug-and-play guy. It's a little scary, though, at that point, potentially rolling, if Biotis is your center, rolling with essentially two rookies on the interior.
I'm not going to play Would You Rather, because here's the deal. Starting, I would suggest, not just in the fourth, certainly not in the fifth, probably in the third, not just me, not just John Owning, I think, but several out here in Cowboys fandom watching, analysts, beat writers, the name Bradley and I started to come up. I think I tweeted it first in the third round. I think that's when I first – I might have tweeted
you
it
did.
In the second
you did.
Round.
You tweeted an Ian Weaver in the third round.
And I – listen, he was way higher on everybody's board, by 100 picks, by the way, I think. And most people had him in the top 80 or so. Picks. His production's ridiculous. Senior Bowl MVP, Utah sack leader. Like, the guy played football. That's what he did. He played football, he got sacks. And then he goes and he tests poorly at the combine. His number one cheerleader has to be John Owning. I mean, it has to be. So, John, I know you've been calling for this for rounds and days, and you're giddy about it. So, what do we have here? A short-armed, slow, producing sackster? What did we get in Bradley and I?
We got one of the most skilled defensive ends in this class, in my opinion. I mean, he doesn't have the length you have with barely over 32-inch arms. He's really a poor athlete, all things considered, but he's just so technical. He's so refined with his hands and his footwork. He attacks angles so incredibly well. A thing with college rushers is you don't see them work angles and really try to exploit and manipulate the movement of offensive tackles. And Anai does that extremely well with changing up his foot patterns, using jab steps, using shuffle techniques. Karaoke is at the top of his rush. And the thing is, with all of his footwork, he also modulates that with his hand technique. So he can explode vertically and he can use two different techniques, or he can kind of use a stutter and then use the same techniques, or even different and modulate them with different ones. He's just so advanced. I like to say he already has his bachelor's degree in pass rushing. He's working on his master's now. He's really, really, really just refined for a college player, and that's why you saw incredible production, not really only as in his last year, but he produced every year he had a chance with Utah. He had at least 7 sacks in every single season. He's a guy that gets after the quarterback. He's very efficient with his movement. So despite the fact that he's not super athletic, he's very efficient. He's moving in the correct direction. He's always making progress toward the quarterback. He doesn't wait. He's not somebody who's going to – it's a race to the quarterback, and he knows that he doesn't have the athleticism, the lollygag, so he's attacking from the beginning. So I just love that about him. I love his tenacity. I love his discipline against the run. His initial footwork against the run is some of the best in this class. He keeps extreme gap discipline very, very well. He has some play strength concerns, and you do see the lack of length on film and his ability to get overwhelmed at the point of attack by some of the bigger offensive tackles. But in the late 5th round, to be able to get somebody as skilled as Anais, somebody who can contribute, I think, almost immediately as a pass rush specialist, especially from, I think, he projects well as to be the quote-unquote closed end, which is the left defensive end the Cowboys have historically held, which is where DeMarcus Lawrence plays. I think that's where he projects moving forward in long term. But I think if you want him to carve out a role immediately, I think he can play that kind of Sam DPR position that Stephen Jones indicated in, because he has shown the ability to rush from a two-point stance very effectively. And then from that Sam's position, if they do run the ball, he's going at the point of attack against tight ends, which he can handle. He can handle easily, especially with how in the NFL how tight ends are glorified receivers. So, I really like the pick in the late 5th round, as you said. I'm leading the case here with, and I love the player. He's one of my pet cats.
Well, Bobby, it's not just everybody else. The Cowboys passed on him at least twice, maybe 3 times from his projected draft position. So why? This is the kind of drop that you would normally associate with character concerns or injury concerns. I haven't heard any of those things with Anai. So why the drop? A 4.940, that's it?
I mean, I know there were scouts who liked him and had been kind of fighting for him a little bit in the 4th round. And so, I mean, I know guys like him. But I think ultimately why he slid in terms of the rest of the NFL was due to the fact that, I mean, he's a short-armed, smaller, not very athletic edge rusher. Those are hard to sell. It's hard for people to fall in love with them no matter how good of a technician they are. But I will say that the guy that he reminds me of, and John and I were talking before we started recording with you, and the guy that he reminds me of, the other guy was a better athlete, and I think – a better technician, but he's a light version to me of Carl Lawson when he was coming out of Auburn. That they're both guys who are a little undersized, shorter arms, big hands that they had to kind of maul and know how to use, and then both had advanced hand usage and advanced technique compared to other guys who were coming out, and guys who, you know, similarly were kind of stiff in the hips. And so to me, that's the best case scenario with Anai, is if you could project him similar to the way Carl Lawson had been, and Lawson had an injury concern. He had hip issues. That was more the reason for his fall, but a guy who also fell well past when people thought he should. And so I think Anai can be really, really good for them. And I know they were really, really excited when they were able to get him there.
Walk through me this real quick, Bobby. There's Randy Gregory, who I know you have been very close to that situation all throughout and whether or not he's going to get reinstated on multiple occasions. There's Aldon Smith, who also has to be reinstated. Plus, he's been off of football for 4 years, but he was an absolute terror when he did play. I'm talking better than J.J. Watt numbers terror.
Yep.
And now you have Anai, including Dorrance Armstrong as well and his growth. What do you see? I mean, it's hard to make any projection. There's no camps. There's no nothing going on right now. But, like, how does this defensive end rotation work out?
It's a good question, because I think they are going to be, as the term that we've heard a lot lately, is multiple. You know, they're going to be 3-4. They're going to show 4-3 looks. They're going to do some different things. I think that when they show potentially some 3-4 looks, I think that you could see one of your pass rushers being Jalen Smith. Or if you get Aldon Smith and Randy Gregory back, maybe you have them standing up and rushing, and D-Law is hand in the dirt in the 3-down lineman set. And so I do think that they're going to be as creative as possible to get everybody the reps that they need. And I know Mike Nolan is a guy who believes in some rotation, not quite to the extent that I think Rod Marinelli did. But I don't think Mike Nolan runs as aggressive a practice routine as Rod Marinelli did. And guys had to have their fresh legs because they were getting worn out during the week. And so, I think that you'll see a pretty fair rotation of guys in various situations. And I think that in a lot of instances, you're going to see Jalen Smith becoming a pass rusher instead of a linebacker. And so I know that I was talking to one of the guys, and they said that they were really excited because they were getting the impression, as somebody who has always been a pass rusher, they were getting the impression they were going to be able to, you know, in some looks, cover some people. And so they are going to try and do some creative things and be a little deceptive in the way that they're presenting their defense. And I think deception is a big key. Chris Richard, who's now gone, obviously, I think said it best, which is we want to cause as many problems for the offense before the snap of the ball as possible. And I think that's what Dallas is trying to do now.
Okay, and before we move on from your guy, John, Bobby said Carl Lawson. Who's the best comp for what a Nye is or could be?
I like the Carl Lawson one. It's not something that I had really given thought to prior because I just mostly ignore comps for the most part. But now that I think about it, I do think that Carl Lawson is the high-end comp for a Nye. We were talking before about just the – what they do to mitigate their stiff hips is really, really similar in the way they use force with their hands. So I think Carl Lawson, a guy who every year he's been healthy, he's been near the top of the league in his pass rush productivity. So I think that's something that you can hope the Cowboys can get in an eye, is a really, really, really potent pass rush specialist for you through the life of his first contract.
Okay, and then the last pick. Here's the thing. Speaking of comps, I think we just drafted Tony Romo.
Oh,
I don't,
nice.
Or maybe Patrick Mahomes. I'm not sure, but I'm debating that currently.
That's the one I was thinking, to be honest.
Well, here's the thing. I'm not going to lie to anybody. I think the key to objectivity is owning your own biases. I'm a homer. Okay. Mm-hmm. The only thing I know about Ben DiNucci is John Owning's breakdowns on Twitter. And there was one pass. Okay. Ben DiNucci, quarterback out of James Madison, picked in the seventh. There's one pass, John, I don't know if you posted it or if it was up on ESPN's coverage, where he does this sort of little Patrick Mahomes shovel pass when he's out. He's scrambling to the left. He's got a defender bearing down on him. He kind of just like swings it under the guy's arms and it hits a receiver or a tight end. And honestly, what I did see in all the stuff is I just saw like a creative, semi-athletic passer. Like Tony Romo was kind of what he reminded me of, a guy who's, you're like, oh, that's a sack. Oh, that doesn't look like it's working out. And then all of a sudden it does. That's all I saw in the 10 clips you posted or I saw you post or somewhere when I saw Ben DiNucci. What's the short analysis of Ben DiNucci here, John?
Yeah, you know, I went into it thinking I was going to hate the film of a late round, you know, quarterback. I was really, really begrudging having to watch his film, but then I watch it and it's a lot of fun. But then it's also really frustrating because you see, like you said, he's doing these things where he's jabbing opposite, he's eluding the rush, and then he's making a really accurate throw, you know, a sidearm throw around a defender, and then his receivers drop it, or, you know, a free rusher. His teammates were not very good, and the competition wasn't very good, so that gives you some pause. But just, he has skills. He has touch on the deep ball, which is impressive. He has the arm talent to be able to fit tight throws in the minuscule windows. He has the scrambling ability, the ability to make plays outside the structure of an offense, which I think is incredibly important in today's NFL. So after watching his film, I really understood why it seemed like Mark McCarthy was so giddy to get his hands on this guy to develop.
And bottom line, Bobby, is this. I don't understand the Cowboys' devotion to Cooper Rush. I actually think they've had one of the weakest backup quarterback situations in the NFL, and thank God Dak doesn't get hurt. Now, I could be wrong. You're closer to the team, and I don't know where the faith in Cooper Rush comes from. And I know Mike McCarthy's always lived with this, let's draft quarterbacks, they're lotto tickets, we should be developing them anyway. But, I mean, I hope Ben DiNucci does upgrade our backup quarterback situation, because I don't understand what the philosophy has been for quite some time.
I think that Cooper Rush was a guy that they were excited how he looked in the preseason as a rookie. And maybe they had, you know, visions of Dak Prescott a little bit, or it was just a little too recent after seeing Dak go off in the preseason the year before. And so maybe they fell in love a little bit too much. But they also did draft Mike White out of Western Kentucky, a guy that was meant to push him and somebody that they wanted to develop. That just didn't work out. And as bad as I think Cooper Rush was the last couple of years, Mike White had been worse. And then so I think that they did try and find somebody to replace him, and it just didn't work out. And I think this is another step towards looking to replace him. They don't want to pay with all the money that they've got to invest in guys long term. They don't want to pay some of these higher prices that it takes to get, you know, a quality veteran backup. And, you know, Dak's proved to be pretty durable. 4 years starting every game, and, you know, he became the first quarterback in Cowboys history, the history of the entire franchise, to start every game 3 years in a row. Nobody's ever done that. And so he's on year four now, so he's surging past it. But I think in DiNucci, yeah, this is an attempt to replace Cooper Rush, who I don't think they're thrilled with. They want to get better there. And I think two of the bigger traits you want in a backup quarterback are a really cerebral guy, somebody who can, you know, if he has to step in, is going to be able to make the right reads and not get you into too much trouble because of his intelligence, and also to be, you know, basically a clerk for the starting quarterback during the week to do homework for him. And then I think the other thing you want is toughness in a backup quarterback. And you see it on there. He's tough as hell. Like, he mm-hmm. takes some hits when he gets out of the pocket and he's scrambling. He'll stand in and he'll make some throws and take some hits. And so I did see kind of what, you know, John was talking about there. Receivers didn't do him a lot of favors. I watched the game against Chattanooga where I counted three contested catches that were all dropped. And then there was another one that was, you know, a perfectly dropped dime 30 yards down the field over the shoulder that the receiver just couldn't track and it went between his hands. And so they didn't really help him out. He showed some good touch. He showed some toughness. He showed some good improvisational ability. And, you know, I think he's smart. He struck me as a smart, cerebral quarterback out there and a guy that, like I said, had the toughness that you really want when a guy needs to stand in and go against a defense's best fastball when you're a backup quarterback and then trying to rattle that guy in place of the starter. So I do think he has some of the traits you really want in a backup.
Well, the Cowboys should have gotten the memo. You don't have to sign Andy Dalton to a $10 million a year backup quarterback gig. You can draft Jalen Hurts in the second round. I mean, I don't know if they're not communicating with the Eagles
on quarterback
philosophy.
You can draft
quarterback.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Go for it, Philly.
Well, I mean, Philly's had better luck with their defense.
Philly's backup quarterbacks have won more Super Bowls than their starters, so I get the need to really focus in on the backup.
Right, right. Yeah, two QB sets. That's what you spend. That's what you spend a second round pick on for seven plays a game, tops. All right, I'm going to go three quick questions for you to end this podcast. Okay, so three quick questions. First of all, John, what pick were you most jealous of out there? I have a guess on what it's going to be, but one guy you really wanted, somebody got, you wish the Cowboys would have got him. Who was it?
Oh, it's definitely Zach Bond going to the Saints. You know, I was leading the, as much as I was leading the charge of Bradley and I pre-draft, I was leading the charge even harder with Zach Bond. I just love the player. And the fact that the Saints were able to get a guy who I valued as a first round pick in the third round is just fantastic value. I'm a little bit worried about them playing as a stack linebacker instead of kind of outside, but just the value of the player, the caliber of player, that's the one I'm jealous of.
I knew you'd say Zach Bond. Okay, and Bobby, you're most jealous of which player, which pick?
It would have been Curtis Weaver to the Dolphins in the fifth round, if not for getting Anai. I thought Anai and Weaver were pretty close, and so I'm not as upset about that one. So I guess the one, and I'm very happy with CeeDee Lamb. I think he should have been the pick, but, I mean, Jacksonville getting Chase on at 20. And I mean, just the combo of getting Henderson and Chase on, who were Dallas's top two targets heading into the draft. Chaisson was a tough one to say goodbye to because I know he desperately wanted to be a Cowboy, and I've talked to over 100 prospects like every year just to kind of get a feel for him, and I always ask him about what it would mean to him to play for the Cowboys, and there has far and away never been anybody more prepared for the pressure of being a Dallas Cowboy that I've ever talked to than Kalyvon Chaisson. And so with some of the leadership issues they had on defense last year, I thought he was going to be a perfect fit. But, I mean, in the end, I think they had to go Lamb, but it was tough seeing Chaisson go to Jacksonville at 20.
Wow. Okay. That will be the would you rather that I'll monitor for years to come then. I'll say this. I don't think the Cowboys had the opportunity, but I would have just loved to see Logan Wilson, Wyoming linebacker.
He was great.
I like doubling down on strengths. I've really fallen into this camp. Receiver, offensive line, linebacker. Plus, we don't know totally Leighton Vander Esch's future. I just a tackling machine at linebacker. Okay, whose class did you like best outside of the Cowboys? Bobby, you go first on that one.
I think probably a tie, Jacksonville and Baltimore. I thought they got some really good players across the board. I also thought Minnesota did great. Minnesota was really impressive, you know, being able to snag Gladney, I thought, as late as they did. And you know, they stacked up all those picks from the Saints and their trade. And I thought they got some good value with, you know, James Lynch and DJ Wonnum. And so I thought they made some really good selections. Yeah, Cam Dantzler, Kenny Willekes. Another guy that I liked as a late round guy. So I thought Minnesota got some great value. Baltimore, Jacksonville, those were three teams that really stood out.
Okay, John?
Yeah, the big team for me was the Baltimore Ravens. I just loved the value they got throughout the draft. Patrick Queen in the late first round was a nice value. Really, really loved the value of getting Justin Matabike in the third round. He's somebody who I graded as an early second round pick, and to be able to find him in the third after, you know, just – it was just incredible value, in my opinion. Devin Duvernay in the third round is nice. A little bit early, but I still see the value there. And then I really, probably my favorite pick is Malik Harrison in the third. He was a guy who was one of my favorite inside linebackers in this class. Tough, strong, can take on and get off blockers. Really reminds me of just a Ravens linebacker, inside linebacker in every way. And I think he's going to really translate and make a big impact for the Ravens in year two and three moving forward.
Okay, you guys both said my answer as well, and I'm going to weave it into my last question for you guys, which is, where would you have ranked the Cowboys class? So the class I'm jealous of is the Baltimore Ravens as well. And I kind of like the theory when you have that many picks of doubling down on a position. So I like that they took Devin Duvernay, who I'm big on. I 100 catches, 439, tough as nails. And then coming back and getting James Prochet later as well. And then they did that at linebacker as well with Queen and Harrison, as you just mentioned. They did it at defensive tackle. And then they get Geno Stone in the seventh. I just think Baltimore knocked it out of the park. I really like the Vikings as well. So my answer on the rank, by the way, is probably third for the Cowboys after those two teams, the Ravens and the Vikings. I think there's other teams that had nice classes as well. I think Cincinnati had a nice class. But Cowboys definitely top five for me, probably second or third right there. After Baltimore, maybe Minnesota. I'll go with you, John. Where do you rank them?
Yeah, I would put them second. I would put them in between the Ravens and the Vikings. I just liked the Cowboys found great value at every single selection. I thought that the Vikings, maybe the DJ Wonnum pick was something that I didn't really like that in the early fourth round. So I think just little nitpicky things in day three for the Vikings that would give the Cowboys the advantage over them, in my opinion.
And by the way, the Ravens and the Vikings both had the advantage of volume over the Cowboys. They both had a ton mm-hmm. of picks. And Bobby, what would you rank the Cowboys?
So I will say in advance that I'm been fairly critical of the Cowboys and the selections they've made in the past and some of the decisions they've made. I think they completely knocked it out of the park. I think they were the best draft in the NFL. I think they got five top 100 players. And, only just really starting to get in on DiNucci. But outside of that, I mean, I think everybody they took outside of DiNucci, who I've still got to investigate a little bit more, I think they were at worst fourth-round grades. And I think that you could, you know, realistically say that Anai, Gallimore, Robinson, Diggs, and Lamb, they were all top 100 players. And I think that when you look at Biadasz, some people would make the argument he's there. And, everywhere that they picked, they were getting a guy who was sliding way past where he should have. Lamb went 10 picks later than he should have. Diggs probably went 20. Gallimore went later than he should have. There were some people, Daniel Jeremiah and Tom Pelissero talked about that Gallimore might sneak into the late first on the day of the draft. And then, you know, they get Biadasz where they did at the end of the fourth round. A lot of people thought he could have been early fourth or late third. And Robinson, a guy who I think was just dinged by Tulsa. But everywhere they went, they were getting guys who I think were sliding 10 to 15 picks past where they should have. So they just got great value and were able to hit almost every need that they entered the draft with. And so for that, for me, it's by far the best draft.
I think the history of this draft class, when you look back, it's always like, did you get three, four? Did you get five starters? Did you get three Pro Bowlers? I think the history of this class, which could rival the Dak Prescott, Ezekiel Elliott class, if these things happen, I think they need Diggs and Robinson to be good. They need it for cap purposes. They need it for managing that position going forward purposes. if Biotish and Lamb and Anai end up being starters and then perhaps even above that, that's where this class becomes a home run. Those aren't needs. Those are luxuries. And if those come in and hit, you're talking about a historic draft class. But they got to hit those needs. I mean, that's sort of the baseline. Those defensive backs, I think, really have to step up for this class to be good.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's dead on. And I think that, like we said earlier, this being the first kind of all scouts draft and the scouts really being able to run it and not having as much of table banging, I think, from Rod Marinelli and Jason Garrett, I think that you see what can happen when they're allowed to do their jobs. And it's, everybody knows the Will McClay and the Stephen Jones, but that they've got a just great group of area scouts there. Chris Vaughn, the former University of Texas defensive backs coach, Ross Winchy, Klein Kubiak, Justin Stuckey, Mitch LaPointe, Sam Garza. They've got a great group of scouts there, and I think you get to see what happens when they're allowed to do their job.
This is really fun, guys. I love breaking it down. I respect both of your opinions greatly, so I'm happy to get the opportunity to talk about each of these players and what you think of all of them directly to you. Thank you guys so much for doing this today.
Absolutely.
Hey, thank you for having me on.